to believe that the world is only as you think it is stupid, he said. The world is a mysterious place, especially in the twilight. He pointed towards the wind with a movement of his chin. This can follow us, he said. It can make us tired, or it might even kill us. That wind? At this time of the day, in the twilight, there is no wind. At this time, there is only power. We sat on the hilltop for an hour. The wind blew hard and constantly all that time. Friday, June 30th, 1961. In the late afternoon, after eating, Don Juan and I moved to the area in front of his door. I sat on my spot and began working on my notes. He lay down on his back with his hands folded over his stomach. We had stayed around the house all day on account of the wind. Don Juan explained that we had disturbed the wind deliberately and that it was better not to fool around with it. I had even had to sleep covered with branches. A sudden gust of wind made Don Juan get up in one incredibly agile jump. "Damn it," he said. "The wind is looking for you." "I can't buy that, Don Juan," I said, laughing. "I really can't." I wasn't being stubborn. I just found it impossible to endorse the idea that the wind had its own volition and was looking for me, or that it had actually spotted us and rushed to us on top of the hill. I said that the idea of a willful wind was a view of the world that was rather simplistic. "What is the wind, then?" he asked in a challenging tone. I patiently explained to him that masses of hot and cold air produced different pressures, and that the pressure made the masses of air move vertically and horizontally. It took me a long while to explain all the details of basic meteorology.
"You mean that all there is to the wind is hot and cold air?" he asked in a tone of bafflement.
"I'm afraid so," I said, and silently enjoyed my triumph. Don Juan seemed to be dumbfounded, but then he looked at me and began to laugh uproariously.
"Your opinions are final opinions," he said with a note of sarcasm. "They are the last word, aren't they? For a hunter, however, your opinions are pure crap. It makes no difference whether the pressure is 1 or 2 or 10. If you would live out here in the wilderness, you would know that during the twilight, the wind becomes power. A hunter that is worth his salt knows that and acts accordingly."
"How does he act?"
"He uses the twilight and that power hidden in the wind."
"How?"
"If it's convenient to him, the hunter hides from the power by covering himself and remaining motionless until the twilight is gone and the power has sealed him into its protection."
Don Juan made a gesture of enveloping something with his hands.
"Its protection is like a..."
He paused in search of a word, and I suggested cocoon.
"That's right," he said. "The protection of the power seals you like in a cocoon. A hunter can stay out in the open and no puma or coyote or slimy bug could bother him. A mountain lion could come up to the hunter's nose and sniff him, and if the hunter doesn't move, the lion would leave. I can guarantee you that. If the hunter, on the other hand, wants to be noticed, all he has to do is to stand on a hilltop at the time of the twilight, and the power will nag him and seek him all night. Therefore, if a hunter wants to travel at night, or if he wants to be kept awake, he must make himself available to the wind. Therein lies the secret of great hunters, to be available and unavailable at the precise turn of the road."
I felt a bit confused, and asked him to recapitulate his point. Don Juan very patiently explained that he had used the twilight and the wind to point out the crucial importance of the interplay between hiding and showing oneself.
You must learn to become deliberately available and unavailable, he said. As your life goes now, you are unwittingly available at all times.
I protested. My feeling was that my life was becoming increasingly more and more secretive. He said that I hadn't understood his point, and that to be unavailable didn't mean to hide or to be secretive, but to be inaccessible.
Let me put it another way, he proceeded patiently.
It makes no difference to hide if everyone knows that you're hiding. Your problems right now stem from that. When you're hiding, everyone knows that you're hiding, and when you're not, you're available for everyone to take a poke at you.
I was beginning to feel threatened and hurriedly tried to defend myself.
Don't explain yourself, Don Juan said dryly. There's no need. We're fools, all of us, and you can't be different. At one time in my life, I, like you, made myself available over and over again, until there was nothing of me left for anything except, perhaps, crying. And that I did, just like yourself.
Don Juan sized me up for a moment, and then sighed loudly.
I was younger than you, though, he went on. But one day, I had enough, and I changed. Let's say that one day, when I was becoming a hunter, I learned the secret of being available and unavailable.
I told him that his point was bypassing me. I truly couldn't understand what he meant by being available. He had used the Spanish idioms ponerse al alcance and ponerse en el medio del camino, to put oneself within reach and to put oneself in the middle of a trafficked way.
You must take yourself away, he explained. You must retrieve yourself from the middle of a trafficked way. Your whole being is there. Thus, it's of no use to hide. You would only imagine that you're hidden. Being in the middle of the road means that everyone passing by watches your comings and goings.
His metaphor was interesting, but at the same time, it was also obscure.
You're talking in riddles, I said.
He stared at me fixedly for a long moment, and then began to hum a tune. I straightened my back and sat attentively. I knew that when Don Juan hummed a Mexican tune, he was about to clobber me.
Hey, he said, smiling, and peered at me. Whatever happened to your blonde friend? That girl you used to really like?
I must have looked at him like a confounded idiot. He laughed with great delight. I didn't know what to say.
You told me about her, he said reassuringly.
But I didn't remember ever telling him about anybody, much less about a blonde girl.
I've never mentioned anything like that to you, I said. Of course you have, he said, as if dismissing the argument.
I wanted to protest. But he stopped me, saying that it didn't matter how he knew about her, that the important issue was that I had liked her. I sensed a surge of animosity towards him building up within myself.
Don't stall, Don Juan said dryly. This is a time when you should cut off your feelings of importance. You once had a woman, a very dear woman, and then one day you lost her.
I began to wonder if I had ever talked about her to Don Juan. I concluded that there had never been an opportunity, yet I might have. Every time he drove with me, we had always talked incessantly about everything. I didn't remember everything we had talked about because I couldn't take notes while driving. I felt somehow appeased by my conclusions. I told him that he was right. There had been a very important blonde girl in my life.
Why isn't she with you? He asked.
She left.
Why?
There were many reasons.
There were not so many reasons. There was only one. You made yourself too available.
I earnestly wanted to know what he meant. He again had touched me.
He seemed to be cognizant of the effect of his touch and puckered up his lips to hide a mischievous smile.
"Everyone knew about you two," he said with unshaken conviction.
Was it wrong?
It was deadly wrong. She was a fine person.
I expressed the sincere feeling that his fishing in the dark was odious to me, especially the fact that he always made his statements with the assurance of someone who had been at the scene and had seen it all.
"But that's true," he said with a disarming candor. "I have seen it all. She was a fine person."
I knew that it was meaningless to argue, but I was angry with him for touching that sore spot in my life, and I said that the girl in question was not such a fine person after all, that in my opinion, she was rather weak.
"So are you," he said calmly. "But that's not important. What counts is that you've looked for her everywhere. That makes her a special person in your world, and for a special person, one should have only fine words."
I felt embarrassed. A great sadness had begun to engulf me.
"What are you doing to me, Don Juan?" I asked.
"You always succeed in making me sad. Why?"
"You're now indulging in sentimentality," he said accusingly.
"What's the point of all this, Don Juan?"
"Being inaccessible is the point," he declared. "I brought up the memory of this person only as a means to show you directly what I couldn't show you with the wind. You lost her because you were accessible. You were always within her reach, and your life was a routine one."
"No," I said, "you're wrong. My life was never a routine."
"It was, and it is a routine," he said dogmatically. "It is an unusual routine, and that gives you the impression that it's not a routine, but I assure you, it is."
I wanted to sulk and get lost in moroseness, but somehow his eyes made me feel restless. They seemed to push me on and on.
"The art of a hunter is to become inaccessible," he said. "In the case of that blonde girl, it would have meant that you had to become a hunter and meet her sparingly. Not the way you did. You stayed with her day after day, until the only feeling that remained was boredom. True?"
I didn't answer. I felt I didn't have to. He was right.
"To be inaccessible means that you touch the world around you sparingly. You don't eat 5 quail. You eat 1. You don't damage the plants just to make a barbecue pit. You don't expose yourself to the power of the wind unless it is mandatory. You don't use and squeeze people until they have shriveled to nothing, especially the people you love."
"I have never used anyone," I said sincerely. But Don Juan maintained that I had, and thus I could bluntly state that I became tired and bored with people.
"To be unavailable means that you deliberately avoid exhausting yourself and others," he continued. "It means that you're not hungry and desperate, like the poor bastard that feels he'll never eat again and devours all the food he can, all 5 quail.
Don Juan was definitely hitting me below the belt. I laughed, and that seemed to please him. He touched my back lightly.
"A hunter knows he will lure game into his traps over and over again, so he doesn't worry. To worry is to become accessible, unwittingly accessible. And once you worry, you cling to anything out of desperation. And once you cling, you are bound to get exhausted, or to exhaust whoever or whatever you're clinging to."
I told him that in my day-to-day life it was inconceivable to be inaccessible. My point was that in order to function, I had to be within reach of everyone that had something to do with me.
"I've told you already that to be inaccessible doesn't mean to hide or to be secretive," he said calmly. It doesn't mean that you can't deal with people, either. A hunter uses his world sparingly and with tenderness, regardless of whether the world might be things or plants or animals.